You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sesame Securities. David, you know what happened on Friday night? Well, you do know what happened because you watch markets and read. Everything was bowling along nicely, and I was chatting away to Nick Kunzer on the 5 o'clock shadow, and looked at the markets, and then suddenly an hour later I looked at them again and the S&P was down 1%, the Dow was down 1%. It was because Russia literally took its foot off the gas. They've stopped all exports of gas via Nord Stream 1. And people don't quite realise in the short term how impactful this is. Well, the market did, but it sort of shrugged it off. The DAX hasn't. But you know what I mean? This is incredibly impactful.
Now, I think we just... This is going to plague us for the next couple of months. I don't think there's anything that we can do. There are three areas that concern us: Europe, China, and we're not even discounting the UK. But I mean, it's call it Europe, UK, if you want to link them together, the US and China. And all of them are very, very difficult to read. I think Europe is probably the weakest because of the gas prices and how this could impact on living and on consumer pockets. I mean, the prices are just extraordinary. There's going to be demands now for governments to come to the assistance of those who can't pay for gas or electricity or food, which in a way is means that you're going to have to raise taxes or even weaken the economy. So it's coming out very messy. And again, you know, no one's quite sure how to play it. Yes, they're going to raise rates, but they're raising rates at a time that the economy is kind of, I wouldn't say teetering, but is under a severe pressure. And then you've got China, where the same kind of thing. And America's probably out of all the areas the strongest, you know, the one that can survive or do better. That doesn't mean it's not going to slow down. But I think it's in a better position than the others. So, Lindsay, we as investors are facing this you know, we're fighting on three fronts. And I mean, if you want to include South Africa, we can call it a fourth front.
Yes.
Where, you know, where, okay, it's a much smaller market, but I mean, it is going to be hurt by all the going ons. It can't, it can't eliminate itself from what's happening. It can't extract itself. So we will be hurt, whether it's commodity prices or whatever comes through here. So you could see it in the Rand at 17. Well, it's a bit better today, 17.20, 17.25. But I mean, from an investment point, it's so difficult to position yourself. And we're not getting guidance from the Fed. We're not getting guidance from anybody. I think, Lindsay, they're all playing with the levers. You know, they're all kind of maneuvering levers, hoping that the chuk-chuk train gets back on the rails. But, I mean, I don't think there's anybody that has a clear idea or confident standing of where we are and what to do. So, you know, against that, it's very hard to do anything or position yourself. You know, we understand where we are and we just got to get through it. But, yeah, it's ugly.
It is. And all you know is that you don't know. All I knew, I thought that we were going to go into a long weekend. Is it Labor Day today in the United States?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Okay, I thought it would be a long Labor Day weekend. People wouldn't care. They would just go home. The market would drift. But no, suddenly someone said, no, we don't like this. And away it goes. And I don't think you can overestimate the impact of it, because Germany, immediately it happened. And in fact, it was probably a day or two before, because there was a cap on the price paid for Russian oil, which is a sort of a limp-wristed response to what Russia has done to Ukraine. But as soon as that happened, Mr. Putin was told, and he said, okay, turn it off. Anyone that is going to cap the price of our oil, I'm turning it off, and I'll sell it to India. And I have to say, you know, the Indian economy is doing very well, but it doesn't have many scruples, I don't think. Mr. Modi's just saying, okay, Vlad, I'll buy it at $65 a barrel, even though it's $95 on the open market.
I think it's most. I'm going to put I'm going to put India into that emerging category.
Oh yes.
That don't really care.
No.
I think Africa doesn't care. I'm not sure about South America's too far away, you know, to be included. But I mean, you've still got some of those nations. I don't want to call them rogue nations, but marginal nations. So you're still around the world. You've still got a lot of people there who don't really have any kind of moral values or war, you know, anything. They're just going to say, where can we get the cheapest oil? Who are we dealing with? Well, do we really care? Do our people really care? No, they don't care. You know, let's buy it. So, I mean, that's what the West faces. So it's you're in that situation. And that's where Vladimir sells his oil or sells his gas or does it. They're not rich nations. You know, they're certainly not rich. But, you know, where do you think South Africa stands, you know? What do you think that Mr. Ramaphosa is going to do when Mr. Biden, you know, calls him across to America to talk about this Nuclear Power Act or whatever it is, the re-signing of the Nuclear Proliferation Act? You know, don't do it. I don't know. I know South Africa is a nuclear power.
It's part of G20, isn't it? Is South Africa still part of G20? I think it is, isn't it?
Well, it is, but I mean, why are we there? I don't know. I think we represent Africa, maybe with whoever else is there. I think we probably punch above our weight in terms of many things. And you know, I don't know what Cyril's going to say to Mr. Biden. You know, the politics are such they swap business cards, but I don't think anything really happens. So Biden will threaten South Africa, with what? Do we really care?
I think what he'll say to him is why haven't you criticised? Yeah. No, one thing that I think Biden, if he's awake, one thing he could say is, why have you not publicly criticised Russia? Why did you phone Mr. Putin after he invaded Ukraine? Why? And Mr. Ramaphosa will say, well, because they were loyal to us during apartheid years. Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, loyal to the ANC.
That's exactly the answer. And they also know that, I mean, there are probably relationships that we don't know that go back to those days.
Yes.
I also think that South Africa, the last thing it wants to do is side with the West in any way. And from that point of view, it just won't do it. You know, it's just part of its DNA. You know, it the last thing it wants to do, even if we're wrong, even if it's wrong, it will not side with it. So what's the consequences? I don't know. You know, we're one of those nations where when I know you talk about grey listing and that, but we're sliding down all these scales. You know, we continue to slide down. When Lindsay, when you want to open a bank account in a foreign nation, you know, for clients and that, we're already on that grey list. They give us an incredible runaround, and it takes months and weeks of proving that we're not friends of the Gupta or we're not connected with government or anything like that to open an account. And that's going to just become more difficult. The same thing with us traveling. You know, they scrutinize anybody.
I was going to ask you
that,
because you're a regular traveler, Australia, New York, wherever, and you're going to New York again quite soon, I think, even though I disapprove of it, given your, you know, fragile state at the moment, but that's your business. I do. But so when you get there, do they have a look at you and say, okay, what are you doing here? Is that what they do?
No, sometimes they do, you know, because you're from Africa. They don't differentiate who you are. It's a South African passport, and it does make things difficult. But I think that opening bank accounts or anything, they will – there's certain – you know, I mean, a lot of my business is opening – doing offshore investments. And we cannot take on clients from – any of the neighboring states, certainly not Zimbabwe or Botswana or Lesotho or what's it, Swaziland, whatever its new name is. And that we just cannot open an account for anybody that is resident there. So even when it comes to South Africa, they scrutinize every, you know, if you inherited the money, how did you inherit it? Where did your dad, you know, if it's from your father, where did he make it? How did he make it? And proof and just carrying on, interrogating, just interrogating the source of those funds to make sure that they didn't come from an illegal nature or illegal path. So we already – I know there's grey listing, and we're doing it at a very low level, but I suppose if you're in business, it's just going to make things a lot more difficult, you know, to do these kind of trades.
All right.
So we're there.
Okay.
We're, you know, that's the reality. I'm not you know, that's we're used to it. What we do worry about is that sometimes, you know, whether something is withdrawn, you know, and you can't travel or you won't be able to do that. That's a big concern.
David, today on the JSC, it's a pretty routine when it comes to corporate announcements. Impala bought some more Royal Bafokeng shares. Trellidor came out with numbers. Bidvest came out with its annual results.
Yeah.
LCL Foods, that was a nice surprise to the upside, certainly up 8.6%. Because it's a commodity, you don't look at that sort of thing, but obviously you read about it.
We look at it, I you know that it swings, and I think all these businesses, Bidvest looks good. You know, I think just going back to Brian Joffe and, you know, going back the 30-odd years, where was it, 1988? So that's what, 34 years, over 30 years that that the company started. I think his whole business model was distribution, you know, and not accumulating assets, not manufacturing where you had to lay down huge amounts of money and run factories. It was all services and distribution. And that served this company very, very well. You know, if you look today, it's on the freight side. You know, freight is a service. It's logistics. You know, you build storage facilities. And I think the benefits of his foresight is coming through, you know, it's coming through now. I mean, they've maintained that. They've stayed along those lines. I know they did build a distributorship. They bought McCarthy, but that was a distributorship. You know, there's no big money involved in doing that. You know, car hire and so on. And it's a very solid result. And it's the one thing that continues to happen. We still continue to trade. So, you know, a good number, a very, very good number.
Yeah, it was. And which one do you prefer, Bidvest or Bidcorp?
Look, Bidcorp, because it's international.
Yeah.
And it's international food distribution, which is when I think about it now, I think if Bidcorp had the similar kind of companies, it would probably be better business than that. But, you know, so unfortunately, Bidvest is confined to South Africa. I know it's doing a few deals on the hygiene side, you know, overseas, and it's starting to expand, and it's looking for acquisitions. I think Bidcorp probably, because, you know, it's got a much wider reach globally. But they're both solid businesses.
Yeah. Very much so. The legacy of Mr. Joffe lingers on, even though Long for Life is not longer for life.
I think that was just probably boredom, you know, wanted to do something. I don't think – I'm not sure his heart was always in it, you know. And also he – circumstances acted against him, because Brian would – he would use paper – to build critical mass, and he couldn't. His paper was trading at a discount, and that took him out the game. You know, that small company trading at a discount can't do anything, but, you know, that's unfortunate. So I think it just became too difficult.
Yeah, he did get bored, actually, because I remember he brought out a photography book, a book of photographs, which I have to say – you could have taken with a really older iPhone. They were very nice pictures of hyenas and giraffes and things like that, but they weren't particularly impressive. But he just thought, oh, I'm going to do something. I'll put that on my CV. Here's my book. I'll give it to the family for Christmas. David, where else are we now? What have we got to look forward to? It's Labor Day in the United States today, so there's no real trade. JSE sort of drifting along. I spoke to Venkat last week, and I have to say, if you do get a chance, if you're battling to fall asleep tonight, have a listen to my podcast with Venkat. He goes through in really great detail the supply-demand situation of commodity prices, which is so terribly important for the rand and for the South African economy, no matter what people say. So have a listen to that. Commodity prices, I still get the feeling they're still bubbling under a bit. I mean, OPEC are meeting, I think, today and tomorrow. So
they're not. You know, the oil prices are. I mean, the oil. You know, you never know. I mean, it's so manipulated and so contrived. I mean, at the moment, it's very difficult to read it. But, I mean, demand is falling. If the Chinese come on, yes, demand will pick up. The price can go up. But other prices just seem to be giving away. Iron ore now below 195.
98, actually. I've got on my screen.
Is it 98?
Okay. Yeah, it's down a percent this morning in China. But
generally, yeah. You always look at the COB. What's it? CBOE.
CRB index, yeah.
CRB, and you can see where commodities are going. You know, they're falling over. It's difficult. But on the side of the producers here is a rand at 17.20. That 2 weeks ago was 16.20. Mm. So, you know, there's been quite a – the dollar remains very strong. I'm looking at the pound now. I don't know whether there has been a reaction to Liz Truss, but it's 115. I mean, that's crazy, hey?
Yeah, it's below where it was when Brexit first shocked traders. And in fact, later on, in the next couple of days, I'm speaking to a chap who's at 91 called Philip Saunders, who's a currency expert. And I'm going to my question to him is going to be, how important is currency to a large asset manager like 91 or Sasfin or whatever? Do you have a look at it? Maybe you don't, David. You're just a bottom down, top up equity man. You look at the balance sheet, you look at the income statements, you look at the results, and that's what you do. But when you're a massive 2.8 trillion rand company, then you have to look at these various currency movements. And that'll be interesting because the dollar is at a 20-year high, for goodness sake.
I know. Tell me about it. I'm going to America. And you know, I know that we brush it aside, but it does make a big difference. You know, when you are there, you do feel it. You feel it in a lot harder way. Lindsay, there was one thing. There's a story that caught my eye over the weekend, and I just wish I had it in front of you because kind of the numbers have just drifted out of my head.
Okay.
It was about I call it a row of houses or apartments. You know how they are, because I think you know Regent's Park well.
Yes.
And some of the apartments that overlook that area. And there was it was an 1850s building or somewhere around there that was bought for 185 million
Goodness.
Pounds or something thereabout. And the whole story was that it had been sold at a considerably lower level, simply because I think the people who originally bought it, and it seemed to be Zenprop, which I know Zenprop from South Africa. So I might be jumping to conclusions and not giving the right facts. But what happened is that I think the building was sold to an Indian, Indian family or an Indian developer, whatever it is. And one of the issues is that because the Russians are not coming and buying, they've been the big buyers.
Yes.
And also the Asians have been very, very big buyers who've been absent from the property market. I mean, the cost of renovating this, which they hope to do, and then on sale, you know, just kind of failed or flopped. But I mean, it was a story which really signified or portrayed, you know, what's happening perhaps at the top end of the market there and in a country like Britain, which relied heavily on foreigners coming in and keeping the economy going. I'm talking mainly the Russians and Asians and other travelers who came in. You know, Britain has always been, or certainly London has always been, that kind of city. Where it wasn't the Brits that were buying, it was a lot of foreigners coming out wanting to live in London. But it was in the FT, but I mean the numbers.
That's a proper house. I mean, that's probably a five-story house bedrooms or something.
No, it extends. Yeah, it extends right. I mean, they showed a picture of it. It extended over a large area. I mean, it was a huge number of different apartments in this building.
Regent's Park has always been the ultimate. You can talk about Kensington Palace Gardens and Chelsea and all those places, but you go to Regent's Park. I mean, I'm just looking at it now. I just put in Regent's Park two bedroom apartment, £8.25 million. Yeah. Sure. Which is quite a lot, isn't it?
That's a lot.
And it says it's got views across the park, it says, and a parking space. That's nice. It's so ridiculous.
Yeah, so I mean, this is what struck me was really property development there and what's going to happen if, probably hurt terribly by what's been happening in Russia and the absence of foreign buyers. Anyway.
You read that. What else did you read? I know you love The Economist and the FT. Anything over the weekend?
There wasn't much. It was all politics and nothing much. And it becomes very difficult because you're reading just the same stories kind of repeating themselves. And it becomes very, very much of a drag because there's nothing we can do. I can stand on my head and whistle and do things, whatever I want to do, as long as the Fed's in charge and it's not showing its hand. And there's going to be the uncertainty. It's very difficult to lay out fresh money and to do anything. So we just kind of withdraw, watch from the sides, see prices go up and down all over the time, all over the place. And we have to wait for the next inflation reading and so on and try and get some kind of clarity as to where the world's going. But as I said right at the beginning, we're fighting three fronts. It's hard. We handle other people's pensions. It's not our savings. It's our client's savings. So you've got to be extra cautionary and extra careful. So yeah,
one has to be. David, let's talk about football a bit now because it's a fairly quiet day today. And I honestly thought that Arsenal looked really good last night against Manchester United. And I suppose it was a foul that led to the Arsenal goal that was disallowed. I suppose. I mean, in normal days, when you were playing, that wouldn't have been a foul. A foul was when you broke someone's leg when you played.
and you got grass burns, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That sort of thing. But I thought they were far more skillful and creative. And I thought Manchester United huffed and puffed. And they blew the house down in the end. But I'm four wins in a row. I can't see them doing anything more than maybe top six United. Arsenal, I think, will be top four definitely.
I hope so. I think they're trying and it's a bit of a setback and they just have to accept it. It's going to happen. I was watching the Man City game as well. They should have won 6-0. And
definitely.
Just couldn't. The skill level was so much greater than Aston Villa, and one freak goal breakaway, and that's it. And they couldn't score in a game, and so you accept it. There's nothing you can do. It's going to happen, and I think I watched Liverpool and Everton just huff and puff and do absolutely nothing as well. So none of the
But that was. I was thinking about that actually, and I go through these fantasies in my head, and I think: imagine that America didn't have football, hadn't embraced football or soccer. Imagine someone from the Premier League said, "I think we should have this Premier League channel on your network." And you would say, well, have a look at the Everton-Liverpool game, for example. You must see the saves that Jordan Pickford made, and you must skillful and everything all this was. Mm. And the guy would say, oh, really? What was the score? And he said, it was 0-0. And the American would say, go and jump in the lake, mate. I'm sorry. What is that? But it was one of the most entertaining games I saw over the weekend. There were games that were 5-2, but the 0-0 match was actually probably the most exciting.
No, I know. But the point I make is that Liverpool did not look that impressive. They weren't outstanding. I think they're missing Mane, I think, massively.
Yes.
Mo Salah's not turning up anymore.
No.
Or they're reading him. He's not doing anything.
He would fight with Mane almost for man of the match. Yeah. And now the Sadio Mane factor is gone. He's drifting on his own. You're quite right. Mm. Sadio Mane. Mm. And also, what's his name?
He's a great player.
Virgil van Dijk. He also seems to have lost it a bit.
Just lost a yard, hey?
Yeah,
lost that
definitely.
Yard. Just not the same person. Just hasn't got that same commitment as well. So I think their vulnerabilities there. And so that makes it a very interesting season. There's nobody playing except so. I agree with you on Man United. The fans, there's nothing worse than the Man United fans, all of a sudden come out. For the first two games, they wanted to sack the family and burn this pitch and everything. Yeah. And now all of a sudden they're off to win the league. You know, I was like, okay, yeah. Just, all right, who are they playing? Crystal Palace? They've got quite a tough game, I think, playing real, even in the Thursday evening. And you know? So anyway, we'll see. I just think that this is very open. You know, this is a very, very open league at the moment, if the teams can maintain it. You know, Leicester worries me. I'm so sad for
Brendan
them.
Brendan Rodgers is unfortunately on the chopping block, I would imagine. Yeah. Within a couple of weeks, he's gone. Because we've already had Scott Parker from Bournemouth go. And I think Brendan Rodgers will go as well. And how he's fallen. And the interesting thing about this is just like markets, David. And I'm going on a bit about football now, but there's nothing on the real markets to talk about. So let's talk about football. Do you remember when Liverpool played Chelsea at home? And all Liverpool had to do, I think, was win their last three games to get their first title. Yeah. And Steven Gerrard got the ball just inside his own half and he slipped. And the Chelsea player ran on and Chelsea won the game. Mm. That was the end of Brendan Rodgers. It was almost as though he couldn't cope with the disappointment of that loss. And then he got sacked. Yeah. Then he went to Rangers and he did okay there. He's going to get sacked from Leicester. I'm sorry.
Yeah. But they just look like a no team. They just are out of it. They came back. I was watching. They came back to 2-2 and it just fell apart. You know, just nothing there. There is that. And poor old Tielemans is, you know, he's a superb player. In fact, you know, their second goal, I mean, Tielemans' tackle, I can't remember on who it was, which led to their second goal, was far worse than the Arsenal foul.
Yeah.
And it was let go. You know,
There's no consistency at the moment with VAR.
And I thought that they were told to allow a little more physicality at the moment, which is... You know, in other words, you can get stuck in. Don't keep blowing it up. But anyway, you know, that could have changed the complexity. You mean they go 1-0 up, they're on top, whatever it is, but it's disallowed. It becomes a big disappointment. So,
but it is a fun league. It's a fun league. I mean, it's early stages at the moment, but it's a really good fun league. I mean, Nottingham Forest were 2-0 up against Bournemouth at half time, and Bournemouth had just lost 9-0 to Liverpool. So you thought it's going to be 4-5-0 to Nottingham Forest, and then Bournemouth come back and win it 3-2 away from home. It was fantastic fun. No. It was super. And also, the most important thing of the weekend, apart from Barcelona beating Sevilla 3-0 on Saturday night, is that Ipswich Town have played 7, won 5, drawn 2, and are top of League One. So they'll be they'll be back playing Arsenal in a couple of years' time. Watch out!
And then I don't want to see the last time they played Arsenal. I was at the cup final; they lost. I mean, Arsenal lost.
Yes, 1-0. Roger Osborne, 78th minute. Yep. Very proud day in my life.
Yeah.
David, thank you very much for your time. David Shapiro is from Sesame Securities, and that was Shapiro World. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.